know that all about 200 rock fans are at the rock show.
Hello, this is the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and I'm Lisa Gonzalez. In this episode, we talk to Scott Lazenby, city manager of Sandy, Oregon. As we've reported in the past, Sandy is well known for its extensive wireless network. The community is now planning for a fiber network and is using every opportunity to bring more access to more people and businesses. As part of Sandy's plan, the community now requires conduit installed for a future fiber network in all new subdivisions. Scott talked to Chris and me about the policy and how it's been received by developers. The approach will expand the reach of the future fiber network and reduce costs considerably.
Welcome to another episode of Community Broadband Bits. Today we're changing it up a little bit. Lisa Gonzalez from my organization, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, is joining me, and we're talking with Scott Lazenby, the city manager of Sandy, Oregon. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Could you tell us a little bit about Sandy?
Sure. We're a small town of population of about 10,000. We're just east of Portland. We're the closest city to Mount Hood, so we're in the foothills of Mount Hood with very hilly terrain, very tall fir and cedar trees, a gorgeous area. We have the Sandy River running right at the foot of our town, which is where we get our name. So we've got the best of both worlds, good access to the Mount Hood Recreation Area and good access to Portland, too.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think we talked about your town last year. And in it, I noted that the last time I'd been to Sandy was during Hood to Coast. I just happened to be around and seeing that famous race winding through town, and it was a lovely time to be there.
Yeah, a lot of people see it that way. We're the first city on the route. It's the longest relay race, I think, in the country.
For those who aren't as familiar, Sandy, you have long operated a wireless ISP that was bringing internet access to your town. And in recent years, you've been doing more fiber optic investments to connect businesses, your anchor institutions, and you even had a great contest, Why Wait for Google, in which you started thinking proactively about how to bring fiber out to everyone and make sure everyone had these cutting-edge connections. So along the way, you've had these conduit policies. That's what we want to talk with you about today. And so I'm wondering if you could just briefly note why conduit is important for a fiber network of the sort you want to build.
Yeah, sure. Like a lot of cities, we require new utilities, new telecom utilities to go underground just for aesthetics and maintenance. And so, but burying fiber or any kind of cable underground, once you have developed streets and sidewalks, is expensive. And so we're trying to find opportunities to get fiber into the ground, more cheaply. So when we started our network, we did use some fiber for backhaul to connect major facilities. And we were lucky then that we had an abandoned water pipe going through the, downtown Sandy on US 26. And so we used that abandoned water line as conduit and just pulled fiber through that. And so it kind of sent the message that we needed to take whatever opportunities we could to tap into existing, abandoned pipes, trenches, and things like that.
So you were able to make use of what you had with the water pipes. The policy, which requires developers to put conduit in now, is a relatively new policy for the city of Sandy. Is that right?
That's right. And so, before we were, using wireless for the last, not only the last mile, but the last few hundred yards to homes, and then using fiber for backhaul to various antenna sites and things like that. Well, as the use of the system increased, it's increased exponentially as people are doing entertainment, watching movies, and moving huge data files, sharing pictures and all that kind of thing that people do, we realized we were quickly maxing out the capacity of a wireless system and figured that fiber was really the only way to go as far as connecting individual homes and businesses. And so once we came to that realization, we're a rapidly growing city. We were the fifth fastest growing in the state of Oregon in the last decade. And so we do have a lot of subdivision activity going on. So it occurred to us that just as we require developers to put in the water pipes and sewer pipes and street lights and such for the new subdivision, that if they're doing that anyway, to drop in conduit for our fiber was relatively inexpensive, but then it would allow us to have completely fiber-ready subdivisions when the homes go in.
We've talked with some other towns that have tried to do these sorts of things, and when they've put it in the code, you may have a developer that is very upset and says, this is going to add to the cost of my development. I don't want to do it. You're foisting it on me. I understand that you've had a different experience, and I want to elevate that. So can you tell us how developers have reacted to your ordinance?
Yeah, and you know, with the recession, our subdivision activity, like everywhere else, it slowed down, and so it gave us time to think this through. And so we did put the requirements in place in the middle of the recession. So we're just now starting to get subdivision activity, and so the first one that had to comply with this requirement was actually excited about it. We sat down and explained that we were providing. This is what we're providing as a utility. We're providing 100 meg internet service for $39.95 a month, just under $40 a month for 100 meg service. And he was blown away by that. And he thought, well, that's going to be a major selling feature for the homes. And
yeah, I think so.
He was very enthusiastic. Yeah. He understood the benefit of it and was excited to work with us on it.
So you haven't had any people who are viewing that negatively then?
Nope, not yet.
Okay, and just to be clear, the cost is borne by the developer. So they're putting in the sidewalks, they're putting in the streets, they're putting in the houses, they're putting in presumably the other utilities as well, right? So this is just treating it the same as any other utility.
That's exactly right. And so we will end up putting in some of the distribution equipment and then. Probably the fiber itself. We'll go ahead and put that through, but they'll have provided a conduit all the way to the house when the house gets built. We're also including requirements for the right kind of wiring in the new homes too, and that's not a problem at all. When they're putting in the low voltage wires in a house to run some extra Ethernet cable is really inexpensive at that stage.
Is that actually in the code? I mean, is it like a Cat 6 requirement or?
Yeah, we're right now with this one subdivision that's going in, we're using that as a test case. And so we're developing some standards that are pretty simple. And the developer of the subdivision is also the home builder. So he's working with us closely on that. We're going to use that as a test case. And if it looks like it's working, we will put it in as a code requirement.
A lot of people are familiar with conduit and fewer people are familiar with volts, which is where one can get access to the conduit. And so do you, in these subdivisions, do you have to have the volts put in as well?
Yeah, we do. And so we have to do a little bit of design for each subdivision to figure out where they go. They're pretty simple though. But that's part of the installation. And it's really no different, if you think about it, than putting in a water system where you have those small boxes where the water meters go. Very similar to that.
For those of us who aren't familiar with how a new subdivision is built, so then is that the developer works with the city to come up with a map of where these things each have to go? Because the developer, him or herself, obviously can't just decide for the city, I'm guessing.
That's right. And I think it's often the case of, locate one, at this distance from the curb, one per every two houses. I don't think we get it down to the inch, but we do specify where they go. And the builders are used to this kind of thing. They've got to locate streetlights and boxes for those and, all these improvements. So the folks that are doing this, this isn't a new thing for them at all.
The developers have, real strict guidelines within different communities. And, one of the things that I noticed on the Sandy ordinance was that it specifically refers to this statement as no expense to the city. And I've seen other requirements in just a couple other places. And first of all, I'm wondering if there was another community that you sort of modeled this after, and also if there was a reason why you went ahead and decided to put that specific language in there.
Well, as to your first question, I know there's some cities in California that have done this for years. We don't have any specific language from them. But we did decide just to treat it the same way we do our own water and sewer utilities and streetlights, too. We're now requiring the developers, they always have to put in streetlights, but instead of the electric utility owning and maintaining those, our city is instead. We're switching to LED streetlights and doing smart lighting systems and things like that. So it's really no different than that. It's just part of the required infrastructure if you're going to do a subdivision.
And then you'd also mentioned some concerns that you had with other utilities and like other conduit, and you'd mentioned that too.
Right.
I'm wondering,
and this is a practical on the ground experience. People say, well, whenever they're doing a trench, you should just have them drop in some conduit for your fiber. It sounds simple, but as Chris said, if you've got say a water pipe that might be 6 feet down underneath a road, and sitting on that water pipe is a conduit that you in the future hope to put some fiber through. Well, if you haven't, designed it out with vaults and different splice points to get at that thing, you're not that much ahead. It's down there, it's down there with a pipe, but then to go back and use it is pretty expensive. So that's a practical problem. The second one is that just having an open trench with some other, utility in there, it's not quite as simple as just dropping in your conduit, because like in our case for our water system, if we have to go in and repair a water line, our public works folks don't want to be in danger of cutting through the fiber with their backhoe when they're trying to expose the water line. So you typically try to get some separation between utilities. And we did find in one case, we did put in a water line and we did have to make the trench quite a bit bigger in order to get some, separation between the water pipe and our fiber conduit, just so that we wouldn't, put either of them in danger when we built it. So it saved us some money, but not as much as you might think.
As I try to think about this in three dimensions, when you say separation and the way you've described it, I'm guessing you mean lateral separation on the horizontal plane, right?
Yeah, that's typically it, because they're going to dig straight down with a backhoe you want to get them separated horizontally a bit.
And so if I understood correctly, then the problem is that so you may have a trench working on that line, but then if you want to locate something 18 inches, to the left of it, for instance, then that may not save you a whole lot of expense because you have to make the trench a lot wider, right?
Exactly. Then the other problem, too, is, in this case, we knew we wanted to get fiber from A to B, and it was along the same route that the water pipe was going. So that worked out perfectly. We went ahead and lit up the fiber right away. In some cases, though, you might say, well, we'll take advantage of this open trench, just throw some conduit in. But in my experience, anyway, it's never at the right place when you need it. You may look back and say, we put that there, but we need to go, north instead of west, let's say. And so I think it's not a bad idea, but it's got some practical problems. And the one thing we haven't done is, we haven't required the telecom utilities to do that. You can imagine there might be some kind of political pushback if we're requiring them to put our internet utility in the cable company's trench. So,
at the same time, I'm curious if when there's major street work that may be ripping up an entire street, for instance, are there any opportunities where you've taken advantage of those situations to get some conduit in an area that you haven't before?
You bet. We're doing that right now, and it's saving us a ton of money. And it's one of these situations where we were just thinking how we're going to get from A to B, and then the state required some highway work of the developer, and that solved it for us. So, yeah, we definitely take advantage of that when we can. And we're building a major water line project ourselves, and we're putting in conduit and vault, so we've kind of thought it through. And an interesting thing is the city of Portland uses fiber to manage their water system, which is in the Mount Hood area. And so they're cooperating with us and installing their own fiber conduit along with ours, too. So it's a really good partnership. And we're all saving money on it because, the trench may have to be a little bit bigger, but it's a pretty big water pipe anyway. And we're not, it's a main where we don't anticipate any taps into it in the future. So, yeah, we're definitely taking advantage of that.
So if we can, I think, summarize the discussion, it basically comes down to, the idea that you could always put conduit in a trench is fundamentally flawed, but there can be many opportunities in which you can. You just need to understand where it's appropriate and where it isn't.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this has been incredibly helpful. Is there, are there any other insights you want to share with us?
No, and I think for a town like us, we have been lucky to be pretty resourceful. Our public works folks have been pretty good. So I mentioned the story about finding the abandoned water line. We've had a lot of opportunities like that where we found water lines. We did in one project installed a couple of conduits just to be on the safe side, and it turned out the county got a grant to put in a major broadband fiber ring through the whole county. Well, we were able to just let them use that conduit that was already in the street. So sometimes, thinking ahead, even if you're not sure how you're going to use this stuff, you really can save a lot over time. I wish in the past, though, we do have Highway 26 running through our downtown, and we have a lot of stuff buried in that road, and I wished way back when we had built a tunnel, a utility tunnel down there, that you could actually walk through, and then with all these changes in technology, it would have been so nice to be able to just to go down there and, string some more cable or fiber and not have to keep digging up the highway to do it.
It's really good to hear that you have that positive relationship with Public Works, because I've certainly heard from other people in communities where Public Works just says, we don't want to get involved with conduit, and the project ends right there, and that's always disappointing. I'm glad to hear you have that good relationship.
Yeah, well, they both work for me.
right. I think as anyone who's dealt with cities knows, different departments can have interesting relationships, even when one's subservient to the other.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing this insight with us.
You're quite welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Scott Lazenby, City Manager of Sandy, for taking some time to talk about conduit policy. You can learn more about the wireless network and the fiber project at the city's website. You can also check out the Sandy and SandyNet tags at muninetworks.org to review our coverage of the community. We want you to send us your questions and comments. You can email us at podcast@muninetworks.org. Our handle on Twitter is @CommunityNets. This show was released on May 28, 2013. Thank you to the group Eat at Joe's for their self-titled song, licensed using Creative Commons. Thanks for listening. Eat at Joe's.